Hi, I'm J.W. Stewart, a veteran broadcaster and journalist with nearly 30 years' experience. I've worked at ESPN and NBC, and now I teach at the University of New Haven.
And I'm Cheyenne Zenger, Director of Athletics at the University of New Haven. Prior to that, Director of Athletics at the University of Kansas and Illinois State University. The first 15 years of my career, however, was a college football coach and an athletic administrator. This is the Dr. Z and J.Dub podcast.
Hi again, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast brought to you by our presenting sponsor, the Pink Clover Foundation. Thanks to everyone for joining us across all of our social media channels today. And as always, our podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. Today, our guest is Larry Vieira, who is the hockey coach at Notre Dame of West Haven High School, which is across the street from us, of course, at the University of New Haven. And he played goalie for us at UNH back in the 1970s, late 70s and early 1980s. Dr. Z, it's great to see you. It's been a while, and I know you're looking forward to bringing Larry on the show here in a few minutes.
Yeah, you know, Larry's become one of my closer friends here in town. And through Rob Thompson, my first month here, I think, we met for breakfast just to talk about all things UNH historically, hockey, athletics, et cetera. And, you know, what you'll find when you meet Larry is he's just such a genuine and humble guy. It went from being all things athletics and hockey, et cetera, to just life in general. And, you know, I grew up the son of educators and, you know, teachers who became professors of education. And I just love being around guys like Larry, coaches, teachers, et cetera. And we got another group of guys that we kind of hang with on a breakfast club on Saturday mornings. And a lot of guys of like mind.
And Larry's part of this breakfast club is what you're saying.
I think Larry's the quarterback of the breakfast club. We'll let him explain that later.
It'll be great to talk to Larry and hear some stories about the about what it was like back when he was playing here at the University of New Haven. Again, Larry's in the green room. We'll bring him out here in a few minutes. Dr. Z, you know, we talk a lot about history and tradition here at the University of New Haven, and certainly football's at the top of that list. But in your year plus here, what have you learned about hockey and its history with our athletic program and our school?
You know, that's really why I asked Larry to be on here is there's certain things I'd like to do in the next 5 to 10 years. And it begins paying attention to and honoring your past and your history. And we're all so well aware of what our history is in football and baseball and both basketballs, you know, and you know, I mean men's and women's and so many of our other sports. But I don't want people to forget that we once had hockey here and we were pretty darn good at it. At the same time, part of my title is Director of Athletics and Recreation. And the recreation part is really accomplished and done so much by Ryan Hagan, the Director of Rec Services here, who's really outstanding. So I don't have to think a lot about that. But I do go to some club sporting events, and I don't know that that's if people have done that much in the past, but I've enjoyed them. And I took John and a friend that was from out of town here to the UNH-Harvard game and watched UNH handle them quite easily, and it had gotten your blood. And I'll tell you what, we had a ton of students there. You can tell people in the Northeast love hockey. And so this is really an eye toward the past and honoring what Larry and his friends and colleagues, you know, from college accomplished when they were here.
I'm glad you brought up, you know, hockey being a big deal here in the Northeast. It certainly is. You grow up with it. You are obviously, you know, you're from Kansas. What was your first introduction to hockey? Did you guys have hockey in Kansas when you were growing up?
No, you know, if it got icy a lot out around there. We just didn't have the professional ice that you guys grew up with. And there isn't as much water. You know, there's farm ponds and things like that. There's giant lakes, but just not a lot of professional ice. So, you know, other than going out in your tennis shoes with some broomsticks and just, you know, swatting things around and acting like we knew what we were doing, that was about it. I can't remember which college I was at. You know, like I said, I've been to 8 or 9 or 10. I've lost track where I went to my first minor league hockey match and kind of got pulled in. And You know, even the Zamboni fascinates me. I'm obsessive compulsive enough to watch that guy and make sure he's doing it just right. You know, we got a sand Zamboni out here on the beach. I called it that once, and John Mays, who comes from hockey territory, thought I was crazy. But they do the same thing. I think it's a sand rake, you know, not a Zamboni, but to me, they do the same thing. Anyway, back to hockey. I love the physicality of it. You know, got sucked in immediately, you know, to that. And, the heart, the drama, the physicality, it's a great sport.
Might be the most.
I can't let you go without saying this. I've held the Stanley Cup trophy.
Really?
Above my head at Illinois State, the Blackhawks had won the Stanley Cup. They brought it to halftime. You know, all my hockey friends, you know, I got to touch it and kiss it and whatever you do. And anyhow, so while I was in Illinois, I went to a number of Blackhawks matches and one of their Stanley Cup victories. And, you know, if you want to see hockey and go crazy, you got to go to the Blackhawks.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, you know, hockey it's a great sport to watch on television, but it doesn't compare to actually being there in person. And it might be the most physically demanding sport that's out there. I mean, if you can skate backwards and avoid getting hit, mm-hmm. and try to control the puck and all the other things that you're asked to do, that's a pretty impressive athletic feat, if you ask me, Dr. Z.
Yeah. Yeah. It's special to watch. And it's one of the few sports I watch without any history. So I truly am a fan. I know what it's like to be a true fan of a sport, having, you know, never played it. Most sports I've played. And so that one's really unique for me, and I can yell things that don't make sense and, throws things or whatever you do, you know, as a true fan.
Very good. Yeah. Someone gets three goals, you know, you throw your hat on the ice, right? A hat trick.
Yep. Well,
let's without any further ado, let's bring out Larry Vieira. Larry was a hockey player here at the University of New Haven. He was a goalie. These days, he's the hockey coach at Notre Dame West Haven across the street, but he's coached all over the state at all different levels. He's won state championships. He's been a Gatorade Coach of the Year here in Connecticut. And it's great to have Larry here on the Dr. Z and J Dub podcast. Larry, thanks for joining us. How you doing today?
Morning. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Larry, I apologize. I didn't think I knew that much about hockey to be able to carry a conversation with J Dub that long. But
no, you were good. I don't think you need me on here to be honest with you.
Yeah, talking hockey with Dr. Z, and Z does not stand for Zamboni.
No. Just change it to B for beach.
That's right.
Hey, Larry, tell us about your unique connection to the University of New Haven.
Well, I mean, my uncle, Porky Vieira, obviously a legendary coach there. So I was attracted to the school. Number one, I just tried to emulate a little bit of his work ethic, you know, with the Vieiras. You know, we're from Spain. We're a bunch of Portuguese shoemakers. You know, that's our MO, you know, workers. And I just, when I, you know, was at high school, I only wanted to go to UNH basically to kind of emulate my uncle and to play hockey at the Division II level. That was what attracted me there.
Now, you were a walk-on, right, Larry? What was your experience like, you know, coming in out of high school as a walk-on and then just the whole 4 years here playing hockey for UNH?
Well, I mean, playing hockey at UNH, this was like a stepping stone for my life. It really was. So I walked on there. Quite frankly, there was 12 goalies my first year for tryouts, probably 70 kids or more, many of them scholarship players. And I just played hockey out of Milford. You know, it was a junior team. There was no high schools. And I kind of had to rely on my work ethic. So, you know, we used to go up to the gym, and that's where the list was, who made the team and who didn't. So he's talking about, you know, your heart palpitating and your palms sweating. And I was fortunate my first year to make the team. I was the fourth string goalie my first year. I never dressed for any games. I just practiced. And I moved up the ladder. And my second year there, Jimmy McQuaid was the starting goalie. He played 25 games. I was the backup. I played three. I played a total of 102 minutes. So it was all about work. It was all about earning your time. And then my junior year, I ended up playing half the games. And then I finished up my senior year. So, you know, overall, you know, I was a backup goalie on this team, but I was with a team that were kids were all American. They were all state. So I had to do extra work. You know, I'd be running down the field. I'd be running down the beach prior to the season, during the season, when a lot of these guys were out enjoying themselves. I needed to have that extra work ethic to compete with these guys. And every time I've been in an adverse situation, whether it's personal or school or coaching, I've always relied on my UNH background in my life. And I didn't like my head coach. I thought I should have played more. So I didn't really talk to Steve Lane that much. But obviously, as I got older, I realized, you know, he did the right thing. And he's the first guy when I got into the Branford Hall of Fame that I thanked for this. He stuck with me. He kept me around as a role player. It paid dividends for them because I ended up winning some pretty good games in that. But the main thing I learned was discipline and was hard work and don't ever give up a dream. And that's all because of Steve Lane. It's all because of UNH hockey. It holds a place in my heart very dear.
You know, one that I could listen to you tell those stories for the next 10 minutes or more. The best coaches I know have stories like you have. Rarely are they the All-Americans. Rarely are the All-Conference guys even. You got to be a teacher at heart, have a love for the game. And usually it's the guys who had to work their way up the ladder. You know, that had to – I had a similar path as you, Larry, when it came to football. And in order to achieve, not only do you have to work harder, you know, the sprints, the lifting, the this, the that, it's also learning the X's and O's and the part of the game that to execute at a level higher than you maybe could have. And that just plays over to coaching in a high, high, high level, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I had time as the backup goalie a lot of times to observe and to observe the coach. And I watched his positive areas and I watched some areas that I thought I could improve as a coach. And one of the things that I always do as a coach is I make sure every kid has a role, whether you're number one or through number 25. Everybody I feel in life needs a role. And I want those kids, the lower end kids, to feel part of the team and to have a role. And I think that's a strength of mine because that's the role that I feel that filled at UNH, that I played there. I was a positive influence, and I filled a role as a backup goalie. And in my junior year, I was the starter for 11 games. So to me, I learned an awful lot of that. I really did, and I'm very grateful to UNH. I'm very grateful to Steve Lane that he allowed me to be here for 4 years because every year you had to try out. So it was nothing was guaranteed here.
Do you tell that story? I'm sure you do with your, as your teams, you come along each year as you're trying to encourage each kid to have a role and here's what you're looking for and say, I've had these roles.
I mean, I've coached with some coaches who were all American and they looked at just my better players. And I had to kind of temper that for what you just talked about. So I let the kids know, I don't like to bring a lot of my personal stuff with the players. It's not about me, it's about them. But your point is well taken that at times, especially in my one-on-one conversations, I will let the kid know where I've come from. And I even parlayed that too. It's kind of funny. When I was done with college, I wrote every pro team a letter asking for a tryout. And I did get a tryout with the Penguins. I have all the rejection letters from Emil Francis and everybody else. I still have them. I keep all that stuff. But the Penguins gave me a tryout, and I was with the Erie Golden Blades for about a month till they released me. So one day I was done with practice. My bags were packed, and I had a bus ticket. Probably wasn't a good sign. But it was just wonderful that I could even go to that level from college. And that's, again, all about hard work.
I didn't know that story. We'll let JW back in here in a minute.
Yeah, I got a lot of good stories.
You know, I think I've told JW this story that when I was coming out of college, I knew I wanted to coach. And my dad was, you know, a former coach and a teacher and a farm kid and all. And I sat down and wrote, this is before computers.
Of course.
In six college programs asking if I could be a graduate assistant.
There you go.
All it takes is one. Now, I heard back from around 36 of them. So 70 some ignored me. There were five positives. And I can tell you to this day who they are. That's not for this podcast, but very similar. You got to have, if young people out there watching this, you set your goals, you have your dreams, and don't be afraid to go after them. And hey, hearing no, you're going to hear no the rest of your life. But regardless of what it is you're chasing, all you got to hear is yes once.
It's like a fisherman, keep throwing out the bait, and sooner or later somebody grabs the bait. I mean, I have like over 300 rejection letters from different schools, from teaching, coaching. It is what it is. Just move on.
It you know, it's like recruiting, it's like fundraising, and it's like getting married, right? You got to ask a lot before you get told yes.
Hey, Larry. I love the story about the Penguins. There are, by any chance, are you a Penguins fan just because they gave you a tryout?
No, I'm a Pittsburgh Pirate fan. I'm afraid to say that minor league baseball team that they are now, but I'm a Montreal Canadian fan. My mother was from Montreal, so I picked that up from her.
How'd that happen, J-Dub? Yeah, the Montreal. I think when people hear, Larry, the stories about minor league hockey, immediately the movie Slapshot comes to mind, right? Was your experience in minor league hockey anything like that movie?
It's exactly like that movie. I mean, the guys enjoy themselves. I mean, there's no doubt that they're going to go out and enjoy themselves. And it's a similar situation. Obviously, it's not movie related, but those guys used to fight because they want to stick on the team. I mean, it was a very, very cutthroat thing, and they would bring guys in every day. A new guy would come in, and they would release you, and that's what happened with me. I mean, I wasn't good enough, quite frankly. I mean, these guys were just really, really talented players, and they brought in a goalie that played at Colgate that we played against, Guy Lamone, and then they ended up releasing me, and then they ended up having a couple guys under contract, which they kept. But it's just like you see. I mean, those guys are in, out. And they enjoy themselves at night, and they're not cutting themselves short in any regard. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dr. Z said earlier that he has, you know, held the Stanley Cup, kissed the Stanley Cup, drank coffee or whatever he drank from the Stanley Cup. As you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, no one's won more cups than Les Habitants. Have you ever had the opportunity to be next to the Stanley Cup or hold it?
Well, it's a similar – yeah, I have. Dean Lombardi, who played hockey here, was the general manager of the L.A. Kings. So when he came – when he won the cup, obviously, you know, the cup follows each player and they have a security guard. He was kind enough to come to Springfield. That's where he's from. And he invited all of us there. So we have some wonderful pictures with the cup. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to touch. And Dean Lombardi, I believe they won two cups under his tutelage. So it's just it's a thrill. It's a beautiful thing. I really just to see it and to touch it. It's kind of like gold. It really is.
So I want to go on record that I had no business touching the cup or being anywhere near it. Okay, it just so happened that our local professional team that front office folks were from Illinois State at the time, and you know I was just lucky enough to be around it, but. Tell us a little more about Dean Lombardi. I mean, here's an alum that has coached Stanley Cup winners. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, Dean was from Springfield. We had a bunch of kids that were from Springfield that were recruited. He went to Elmira College, and then he transferred to UNH. Hard-working guy. He obviously went to law school, and he moved up the ladder. And he became the general manager of the LA Kings, and he was the guy behind their success. And I believe he's with the Flyers right now in a little bit lesser role. And either he's retired or he's looking to make a move at some point. But he's a UNH alumni, and then the UNH hockey world has those type of alumni, much more talented and much more esteemed than I am. I'm just happy to share some light on some of these guys. But these are. You know, these are high-end people. They've accomplished a lot, and they went through the doors of UNH.
Larry,
yeah.
Hopefully Larry. We can continue to shine a light on these folks and not close the door on the past.
Well, that's why I'm here to help out, and there's a lot of other folks that would be happy to share their experiences in the past. There's a lot of guys who love UNH and love UNH hockey and would do anything to see this program in Division I level. There's a tidal wave of kid people out there that would love to see that happen. And we appreciate your efforts, what you've done, and what you've talked about since you've come on board.
Larry, how has UNH grown since you were a student athlete?
Well, it's not even close. When we were here, we had We had two or three places. We had the Ratskeller Bar. We had one dorm. What's that little dorm? I forget the name of it. It was where the football players used to stay. It's really, really small. It's across from Notre Dame now. That was the only dorm in town. It's not even close to what it is. When these guys come back, and see the school, they're shocked. I mean, it's as we say, it's a real college now. For when we were here, it was almost like a commuter school. And I didn't live at UNH. I lived at Southern, which is another funny story. What we did back in the day. We'd probably get arrested now. Living at Southern, but that's what we did.
You know, you're not the only athlete I've heard referencing that type of living situation. And you couple that with a lot of the former athletes I've talked to who lived, on the shoreline from Campbell Ave all the way down to Milford, what I call Florida. It looks like Florida to me over there.
Of course.
You get a little closer to sea level. And Rob Thompson tells the stories and has on here of after ball games, they'd go back to those houses or apartments and have bonfires out on the sand. And I just can't fathom that's what you guys did in college.
Well, there was a house near Chicks that's knocked down. That's where a lot of guys live. Guys lived in East Haven. And then, like I said, we lived at Southern. We had a bunch of hockey players that we liked the odds of living at Southern rather than UNH, if you could figure that out. But we got into the Southern apartment complexes, and we lived there. So we lived wherever we could, and then most of us commuted to UNH because, quite frankly, you just had one set of dorms, and then where the football guys lived, the name's eluding me, the name of that place, but it's the smallest dorm you have left here. So there wasn't a lot here, to be honest with you.
These days, Larry, you teach at West Haven High School, yet you coach at Notre Dame West Haven, which is across the street, as we know. What is it like? Because those are rival schools. What's it like to teach at one and coach at the other?
It's a wonderful situation because I love the students, athletes, and the students at West Haven. I just love the hard middle-class working environment. I teach AP psychology, but at times it's challenging. And I love to go to Notre Dame where the kids go, yes, sir, no, sir. So most of the time, it's a wonderful situation. But when we're going to play West Haven, like we did last year, almost 2,000 people stuffed into Bennett Rink. It seemed like the place was packed to the gills. During that day, as I mentioned to you before, I was like Moses when I was walking down the hallway. It just split. The hockey players didn't want to talk to me. So, and I understand that those kids want to beat Notre Dame. They consider that the rich school, so the hardworking middle-class kids want to beat them. And then come game day, I'm part of the enemy. So it's uncomfortable, to be quite honest, because I love the kids at West Haven, but I also love the kids at Notre Dame, and I can't lose a game. I mean, that's just not in my DNA to want to lose. So it's an uncomfortable situation, quite frankly. The good thing is the next day, win or lose, we get back to normal. But it's a little uncomfortable at times because of the hated rivalry for both schools. And that's real. It really is.
That's the kind of stuff you make movies out of, quite frankly.
Yeah, well, feel free to reach out. I'm here.
I love, sports movies. J-Dub and I talk about that all the time, what our favorite movies are, et cetera. But at the end of the day, I tend to look at everyone's life as a book. Everyone's got those analogies they use to look at life. And to me, that's as an old English teacher or professor or whatever you want to call it. It's easy to look at stages of life as chapters, et cetera, et cetera. And, people probably haven't said this to you, but what you just described there is the stuff movies are made of, I know so many men, once they hit their 30s and 40s and 50s, who wish they would have coached, but they started a career going down another path and they weren't thinking about that when they came out of college. And you and I are rare in that we both got education degrees or at some point certificates and are able to teach. And a lot of young men today, and I'm preaching to the young men who may be watching right now, they don't think about it as a career path until it's too late. And then they'd have to start over and go back to school and get certified, et cetera, et cetera. It is a career path. And we need more men in education. We need more teachers and more coaches in the hallways, in the classrooms. This is one of my purposes in life, is to recruit student athletes into the field of education. And I didn't know I was going so hard there for a second, but what you're doing is it changes lives and it changes the future of America. You know, I don't want to talk politics. People are doing that all the time right now. They should be. But you really want to impact America, impact young people. That's how you make a difference.
Well, again, you don't realize that when you're in the trenches a lot of times because you're, you know, you're keeping your head in the foxhole. But I have kids all the time that say, Mr. Veer, I'm now a psychology major because of you. I have players that I coached in the 80s. Now I'm coaching their kids. They say, Coach, without you, I wouldn't be here. And I'm just an average guy. When they say that to me, I'm almost embarrassed because I cannot believe I had that kind of an influence. But that kind of keeps you in the game. And if I can keep influencing kids to become better adults, then that's what my role is. You know, I mean, kids are kids. You know, whether it's college, I've coached at college, whether it's high school, we make a difference. And that's why I got into this profession, to be a teacher, because I wanted to coach. I mean, quite frankly. And I tell the kids when I go to Notre Dame, we'll be there today with our workouts. I'm honored to be there. I really, and I'm not saying that. I'm blessed that God gives me a day to be with you guys. And I tell them that every day. I'm the luckiest guy in the world that I'm allowed to coach you guys, because it's an honor. To be hired as a teacher or coach is an honor. And anybody who doesn't understand that as a coach, they shouldn't be doing it. And I firmly believe that. And I tell my players that all the time, that I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I really am.
You know, J-Dub, we talk about movies all the time, and I can't believe we haven't mentioned this one. I can't believe it's not on my top 10 list, and I got to go put it back in there. You know, I think every teacher, every coach ought to watch Mr. Holland's Opus once a year. You know, here, you know, if you remember that movie, he, music teacher, band director, that, you know, they kept cutting his budget, and eventually, you know, he almost gave up many times, and, you know, eventually he had to retire. And when he did, you know, the outpouring of love and support, and just like you just shared, you know, that was the end of the movie. And it inspires you to maybe live a life that matters, a life of purpose and significance, versus what I hate to say this, but we in college, my own kids, you know, we chase careers that make money. Well, you can make money and not be happy, or maybe make a little less of being education and make a difference. And that's, I just, maybe this next generation's seeing some of that. I don't know.
Well, as long as I get help, you know, the young adults along the way, that's what I've chosen to do. And I'm going to continue doing it till I don't have the energy anymore, but my energy is off the charts, to be honest with you. I feel like I'm 21. I never get tired of coaching. I really don't, or teaching.
It helps to be around the students and student athletes. I think it gives you that bolt of energy that sometimes we all need. Larry, I think you're in a perfect situation because, you know, you teach psychology and you get the chance to coach as well. Do the lessons you teach your students in psychology class, are they similar to the lessons you try to coach when you're hockey players and vice versa?
They're exactly the same. I mean, with our team, we set goals, objectives, and we help the kids develop skill sets to meet those goals and objectives. So I coach like it's a classroom. You know, when I first started coaching, I used to beat the kids down and then build them up. If you did that nowadays, you'd last about 2 seconds. So what I do is I give the kids positive reinforcement, and that takes away the negative. So what I do here is exactly the same way in which I'm as a teacher. And I spend a lot of time with these kids in terms of building up their self-esteem and their self-confidence. I do so much with that because, quite frankly, these kids need a lot more time than you can imagine. I have a lot of one-on-one couch sessions all the time with the kids. That's what I'd say.
In light of that, can you compare how does college hockey coaching compare to high school coaching?
There's not a lot of difference. Kids are kids. Kids need to be reassured. Kids need to work hard. Kids need goals and objectives. The only difference that I saw at Hattonville College and Notre Dame was the strength, the age, and the skill set. There's no difference. I mean, when I was out recruiting, I was selling the kids, and the same thing I sell them in life. And there's really no difference. It's just the age. It's all it is.
You mentioned the rivalry between West Haven and Notre Dame West Haven. Regardless of that, what is it about West Haven as a whole that you really love?
I live in Milford, but I've always loved West Haven. I've always followed their hockey program, and it's rich in tradition. And I, again, this won't be a surprise to you, but what ties me into them, this is a middle-class neighborhood. It's a tough town. You know, you used to have a lot of Italian-Americans here, and now it's changed a little bit, the dynamics of it. But the only thing that's stayed the same is it's a hardworking, in-your-face town. And I always appreciate people. I always appreciate athletes, student-athletes, that they're going to give you everything they can. And if they don't like it, they're going to tell you that. And I love people that tell you the way they feel. That's, I'm attracted to those kind of folks that say, hey, Beer, I think you're 100% wrong. You're an idiot. Okay, I can deal with that. At least I know where you stand. And now let's problem solve to change your perception. But that's what I like about West Haven, is the hardworking, tough middle-class people.
I agree. It pulls you in, J-Dub. It really does. From East Haven to Milford, it's a special place, and so are East Haven and Milford. You know, that whole mentality.
Yeah, I think that, and we've said this many times on the show. It seems like we say it, you know, once a week or once an episode about, you know, that blue collar, the hardworking mentality, how it's not only here at the University of New Haven, but it's in the city of West Haven itself. No matter where you are, where you're going to school, you know, I'm sure, again, West Haven, you know, they're going to work hard. And I think Notre Dame, West Haven, they're working hard too, because they have to work hard just to get in to that school, number one, because the academic standards. And then you have to work hard to be able to succeed and go to college and obviously play hockey. Larry, when you got the job at Notre Dame West Haven, you've been the coach there for a couple of years. You call it your dream job. How come?
Well, Notre Dame, quite frankly, similar to Fairfield Prep, I mean, historically, those have been the most decorated high schools in the whole state. And for me to, you know, be there right now, again, I thank God, and it's an honor. So, again, it's about all the hard work that I did prior at my previous coaching positions, and we've had success everywhere I've gone. And I'm just lucky to be there. So you always want to coach on the best level. And Notre Dame to me is the best high school situation, best high school program. Again, Fairfield Prep has more state championships, so you could consider them the best. But we are one of the best high school programs in the state, and I'm the leader of that program, and that's an honor, which I don't take lightly.
Larry, I've been told this story. I wanted to run it by you just to get this verification. Once upon a time, you used to drive a red Trans Am. Is that true?
I also had a blue Corvette.
Where are those cars now? Do you still have them?
I have pictures of them, but I sold them. It was time to grow up a little bit. I didn't think the Corvette was too good to drive around in with more than one person in the snow. That's funny that you heard that. But, yeah, I used to have a 69 Cutlass with the Craigers too. So I always liked what I thought were fancy cars. That was my thing.
the red Trans Am, did it have the iconic Firebird on the hood?
No, it didn't. That was the with Burt Reynolds. That was – I missed a year by that. Now, that's a good one. You pull that one out, but I'll show you the picture someday.
So I got to ask. I didn't know that. So the Trans Am didn't have the – Firebird prior to a certain year.
Yeah, that was the deal. I'm not a big car guy, but I missed that by a year or so. That was like later 70s is when they got rid of the bird.
I had an orange red Camaro, which never had, you know, that's a different brand, you know.
Yeah.
The Trans Am / Firebirds did, you know.
It's funny.
So wait a minute. You traded those cars in, and what did you get in place of them? And what do you drive now?
I drive a Lexus now. I still got the same addiction. I had a BMW and a Lincoln. So, I always just like nice cars. I do a lot of driving, and I just figured I might as well be comfortable with them. The Corvette was not comfortable, and the Trans Am was not comfortable. Those felt every bump you hit, you'd feel them.
Dr. Z, anything else for Larry before we let him go? He's been very gracious with his time today.
I could keep going. We could talk about, you know, fast cars. We could talk hockey, West Haven, you know, just the whole coaching philosophy. You know, this was fun to do. I wish we could bring you back, and maybe we will, just talk coaching philosophy.
Yeah, I would love to do that. I also, you know, love to talk about a little bit about the history of UNH hockey at some point. You know, I mean, I'm pretty anal with all that stuff. I've kept records and I've kept names and rosters and photos. I just always keep that type of stuff. And it's a rich tradition at UNH. And like I said, we're thrilled that you're here, and we're thrilled that you at least were in the radar of becoming a high-end program again, because it was a high-end program when we were here. We were Division II playing Division I teams. You know, we had Princeton on the schedule, Colgate, Lowell, Merrimack. I mean, we were legit. This was not a schluppy program. This was the real deal back in the day. So anytime you want to have me on, I'd love to talk about that. And again, we'd love to see it back to where it was.
That's great. Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Larry, thanks very much. Great to be here with you. And it's Larry Vieira, the hockey coach over Notre Dame High School, Notre Dame West Haven, across the street from us, and a goalie from 1978 to 1982 here at the University of New Haven. Dr. Z went from walk-on to scholarship player, and, you know, he had some great stories to tell. I mean, you see this every Saturday, I'm guessing, yeah. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And then Larry and I talk off on our own, and you can tell, just sharing coaching philosophy and talking kids and all things New Haven area, West Haven, Milford, East Haven, Brantford. You know, he used to coach at Brantford, and he's got a depth of experience here. Just great guy to visit with, and I mean that. As we go through the next year, we could have one of these sessions where we just have him recount the history of UNH hockey. And he and I have talked at length about what we see the future of that being here. And this is the beginning of just honoring the history in the past. And that's what we're doing for a while. We've got a long row ahead of us here in terms of funding the programs we have. We have to catch up on some Title IX sports. And we have several of those in mind of what we would add next. So we're talking long term, but you have to start talking about it at some point to get where you want to be 5, 7, 10 years from now.
Let's see. Brocky Rob Thompson, our producer, I think is backstage. If he has a minute, I'd love to get his perspective real quick too on Larry. I know that those guys know one another pretty well. Rob, it's great to see you. It's been a little while. Your thoughts on Larry? Because I think that you guys go back a ways, don't you?
Yeah, I've known Larry for a long time. But you know, just hockey guys are unique in general. You know, and there's a very small group of them, especially that came out of this area, Larry being part of that club, that elite club of coaches and former players. But the impact that Larry's had on the places that he has been, I think after talking to him in this format, now you start connecting the dots and you see why, you know. So it was, I think the questions you guys asked him and just kind of him as a person and what he's done to grow. Is pretty amazing.
Rocky Rob, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks for everything you do for us, and appreciate the perspective. And as we get ready to wrap up the show here, I just wanted to thank our presenting sponsor again, the Pink Clover Foundation. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and certainly what the Pink Clover Foundation does in its fight against breast cancer is hugely important. And to support what they do, please visit PinkCloverFoundation.org. For Dr. Z and for Broccoli Rob Thompson, our producer, for executive producer John Mays, I'm JW Stewart. Thanks for watching the Dr. Z and J-Dub podcast. We'll see you next time.